You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, March 13th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, 1 year and a couple of days after the Fukushima disaster, I guess, began. Joining us on the program today, Carl Grossman, professor at the State University of New York. He's a nationally syndicated TV program, Enviro Close Up, will be talking to us about the legacy of Fukushima. Also on the program today, why we're not Greece again. Rush Limbaugh, they've actually suspended sales, national sales of advertising on this program. We will talk about that. A bounty now offered by progressive groups to whistleblowers revealing who their corporations are giving money to in terms of politics. And I guess there's a Republican primary today in some states where they think Obama is a secret Muslim. That and more. But before we get to any of those things, ladies and gentlemen, this just in, Rebecca Brooks, you remember her, the former Sun and News of the World editor, close confidant of the Murdochs and Prime Minister Cameron. She's been arrested again. Man. Not quite sure yet as to why she's been arrested, but she was arrested this morning, ostensibly dealing with the phone hacking scandal. But of course, this seems to be a significantly larger deal than just phone hacking. In this case, she is being arrested for the conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. Now, that's different than conspiracy to intercept electronic communications, which is the phone hacking. This, I don't speak British, but it sounds to me like this has to do with the obstruction of justice. And you'll recall that one of the aspects of this scandal, in an attempt to cover up just how widespread the bribery of government officials, of members of the Metropolitan Police, of military officials was the involvement of Sun and I think News of the World reporters into the investigation of the Daniel Morgan murder, because it somehow involved people that were in the process of doing this phone hacking on behalf of News of the World. So this is all a little bit sketchy. Just going after reports, she was arrested early this morning. There were arrests of six people, including Rebecca Brooks and apparently her husband, Mark Hanna. Charlie Brooks. Another man who was arrested, Mark Hanna, he was the director of group security at the News International. Now, you'll also recall that at one point, police somehow found a computer of Rebecca Brooks that was in a bag, in a trash can, in a parking garage. Now, we don't know what the contents of that computer was. We do know that Rebecca Brooks wanted it back.
Isn't that how everyone discards their old laptops?
Definitely. If you're not, if you don't care about the environment. Or if you're trying to hide something and don't realize what you got to do is just destroy the hard drive. Who knows? But apparently this is ongoing. And the morning arrest took place between 5 and 7 a.m. Presumably that's London time. In London, Oxfordshire, Hampshire, and Hertfordshire. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. I got to imagine Rupert Murdoch is just sort of, he's got to be quaking in his boots. And it really is starting to look like Fox News is actually the bastion of integrity and do-rightedness in the News Corp empire. But we shall see. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Professor Carl Grossman. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Professor Carl Grossman. He is a professor at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. He is the host of the Enviro Close-Up TV program and author of six books. Welcome to the program.
My pleasure.
So, Fukushima, as you know, or I guess the one-year anniversary of the beginning, really, of the disaster at Fukushima, because I think we both agree that this is an ongoing disaster in many respects, was 1 year ago. Just give me a sense of what the legacy is. You wrote a piece last week about the cover-up that's involved at Fukushima. Lay that out for us.
Well, I mean, here we have the first anniversary of Fukushima, which has just passed this weekend, and really very, very slight journalism, certainly investigative journalism, involved the claim of the nuclear establishment, the nuclear industry, nuclear officials in government, has been, continues to be, that no one died, and they minimize, I mean, they, to the extreme, the consequences of this catastrophe, and somehow they were able to still on the first anniversary get away with what I consider one of the biggest big lies of all times, because this disaster is going to take an enormous toll. It's not going to come immediately, but it's going to be coming. And for the media not to for the press, and I've been in media and journalism all my working life, not to understand and to learn about the situation fully, but rather believe the propaganda of these nuclear Pinocchios, to me, is just outrageous.
All right, so let's get specific here. The biggest so you're saying that the biggest story here, the biggest sort of whitewash, is the notion that it's essentially Fukushima is behind us, as opposed to the implications of what we can expect in the future in terms of, I guess, literally and figuratively, the fallout from this. What do you anticipate will be the fallout from Fukushima, and why?
Well, I think the benchmark, the tragic benchmark for Fukushima, is the results of the Chernobyl nuclear plant accident in 1986, and in 2009, a very important book was issued by the New York Academy of Sciences. The lead scientist, Alexei Yablokov, he's a famed Russian biologist, and other scientists were involved. And they analyzed the medical data since the accident up till 2004, from 86 to 2004. And on the basis of fallout around the world, though in particular in Russia, Belarus, and the Ukraine, but all around the world that stuff fell, like the fallout from Fukushima, they calculate between those years, those decades, 985,000 excess deaths. In other words, 1 million people have died so far from the radiation released from Chernobyl, many of those from cancer. You look at Chernobyl, you don't have one nuclear plant going wild. You have several, and spent fuel pools too. The fire at the Chernobyl nuclear plant finally went out after several weeks, but the releases, substantial releases, from Fukushima continued week after week, month after month. So Arne Gundersen, who was a nuclear engineer, he was a big executive in the nuclear industry. He has just, he was on Democracy Now! Two days ago. He projects about 1 million deaths. Dr. Yablokov himself, he believes, because of the multiplicity of nuclear facilities and the fact that the population in that area of Japan is far more dense than the area around Chernobyl, and the fact that it went on for so long, the discharges, the releases, Dr. Yablokov believes it'll be worse than Chernobyl in terms of the final toll.
So we're talking, at least according to Yablokov, over 1 million people will die as a direct result over the next, I guess, I mean, to maintain some parity, over the next 20-odd years as a result of this catastrophe.
Yeah, well, particularly for so-called low-level radiation, there is a latency or incubation period of 5 to 40 years before the exposure manifests in cancer. On the other hand, a lot of that stuff that came out of Fukushima was not low level. It was the cesium and the strontium and the iodine and so forth, plutonium as well, highly toxic stuff coming out in large quantities. But I think we're talking 10, 15, 20, 25, right up to 40 years, we're going to see the toll of Fukushima.
And this is, of course, not even essentially taking into account the implications of the 10, 15, 20 miles area around Fukushima, which is essentially ghost land now.
Yeah, well, it's become a sacrifice zone. I mean, a good chunk of Japan, as a good chunk of Ukraine became, uninhabitable for probably millennia. That's a vast area, a very substantial. I'd say more than 10 or 15 miles very heavily contaminated.
And do we have a sense, I mean, has there been any type of extensive reporting or study of the implications of how close to the ocean, I mean, Fukushima is right on the ocean, but I mean, the implications of this fallout sort of making its way through the food chain and how it travels because of the proximity to water.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of analyses there. The amount of radioactive poisons in the water and in the fish, just stupendous, incredible numbers. And when you get into the marine environment, what you have is a concentration factor at work. It gets on the seaweed, little fish eat the seaweed, medium-sized fish eat the little of fish, and large-sized fish eat the medium-sized fish, some of those large-sized fish are migratory. So it isn't just eating sushi in Tokyo in the next several years that it's going to be problematic. The marine environment has been very substantially contaminated by Fukushima.
And what about fallout on the western part of the United States? I mean, I imagine, you know, the fallout reaches the western United States at the very least.
Western and eastern United States. In fact, a very important study was done. It was in a peer-reviewed journal by Dr. Jeanette Sherman. She's a toxicologist, goes way back to actually the old Atomic Energy Commission, a real expert in radiation exposure. And Joseph Mangano, he's the executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project. He's an epidemiologist. And they looked at the EPA took in the weeks after the accident began on March 11th, a fallout, particularly iodine-131, from Fukushima in many cities on the West Coast, and also cities in Philadelphia, for example, on the East Coast. And what they did later was, again, look at the fallout over essentially a 10-week period and correlate that with statistics of infant mortality, which were obtained from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, a U.S. operation. And they found, in Philadelphia, a 48% spike in infant mortality. Well, in these West Coast cities, we're talking San Francisco, Seattle, and so forth, higher than 25% spike in infant mortality. Well, overall, during this 10-week period, the rise in infant mortality in the United States was 2.3%. Now, infant mortality is a first indication of the impacts of radioactivity because the fetus is rapidly dividing and the cells are dividing rapidly, and thus radiation will impact on a fetus much more significantly than on an adult person. Cancer comes after that. Not too incidentally, the EPA, which was providing this data on fallout on early May, declared that they were going to stop. They had been doing readings quite regularly, every several days. The EPA announced that they would stop taking regular readings. They just go to quarterly readings because the fallout was so minimal, which smacks to a lot of people of a very serious cover-up. But what we're talking here about is consequences of Fukushima in the United States.
Now, when you say it smacks of a cover-up, I mean, what is it exactly? If we were to see this every 3 days, we would get a sense of just how much we were impacted by the fallout, or is this something going forward? In other words, when you talk about a cover-up, is this a function of there is now a full-court press to sort of minimize the impact, and therefore, if we can measure the difference between the radiation at a time where we were subjected to the fallout, and we don't have as much readings for the times that we're not, then it makes it a harder case to say that there was actually any impact.
Of course. I mean, you suppress the data, and it becomes very difficult for independent researchers like Dr. Sherman and like like Joe Mangano to do the correlations. It's a very serious issue. Jeff Rush, who is the executive director of Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, that's a group that represents whistleblowers in government. He declared after the regular readings by EPA was stopped that it's just inexplicable to him. I mean, they were still happening, fairly significantly, and they just suddenly EPA stops. Like, what's with EPA? What's with EPA? I mean, my first book on nuclear power, the way it goes back to 1980, is called Cover Up, What You Are Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power. And I spend chapters going through from the very beginning how those behind the nuclear enterprise attempted to deny, to minimize the lethal consequences of their technology. What's new here is that the disasters, which they always knew would come, have come. Chernobyl, now Fukushima Daiichi, the deaths will come. They've come already as a result of Chernobyl. And still, I use nuclear establishment here because it's more than the nuclear industry. It's the nuclear entities within government, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the Department of Energy, and so forth. And other countries have similar governmental nuclear establishments. Here the consequences have become manifest, and nevertheless, the cover-up just continues. And the push, well, for example, in the United States, the push continues to build new nuclear plants in the wake of Fukushima.
Well, that was actually my next question. I mean, to what extent has Fukushima impacted our government's policy towards nuclear power?
Not at all. I mean, it's an outrage. I mean, it has in terms of the impact's been there in terms of public perception. I mean, the majority of people in the U.S. do not want nuclear power, ever more so in the wake of Fukushima, and would join if they had a choice with the people in Germany. I mean, Germany has now, in the wake of Fukushima, said no to nuclear power and has committed itself to safe, clean, renewable sources of energy, solar, wind, geothermal, and so forth. And Italy, there was a referendum in Italy, 93%, this is after Fukushima, voted against building nuclear plants in Italy, even though the government at that point was promoting nuclear power. Berlusconi loved nuclear, but boom, after that referendum, a reversal in Italy, Switzerland, similar. But here in the United States, the public hasn't had a voice. The Congress remains quite in the pocket. Virtually all members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, of nuclear power. The Obama administration, although the president, when he was running for office, and I've written about this, you can check it out on the web, got a Counterpunch article I wrote entitled "How Obama Goes Nuclear." Before the election, President Obama said some very strong things about nuclear. For example, he addressed the Keene, New Hampshire editorial board and said, the problem with nuclear power plants is they can blow up and kill people. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it was very close to what he said. I mean, it wasn't like George W. Bush. Barack Obama knew the stakes here, but once he became president, he not only was pushing clean nuclear energy, but because Wall Street has walked away from nuclear power. I mean, these plants are so incredibly expensive, $16, $18 billion to build. Wind, for starters, is much cheaper. Other renewable energies, technologies are including solar, ready to meet the price of nuclear. But in any case, here's Obama not only pushing safe, clean nuclear, but arranging for loan guarantees. In other words, taxpayer dollars to go to help the construction of these nuclear plants.
In fact, I guess it was in early February, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission permitted two new power plants, nuclear power plants, to be built in Georgia. And there's also been simultaneously an attempt to change the government's analysis on the impact of nuclear plant accidents.
Oh, yeah. Those two plants were the Vogtle plants to be built with it's billions of dollars in a loan guarantee that has been promised. The two Vogtle nuclear plants, Westinghouse nuclear power plants, even though in the licensing of those two plants, the chairman, Josko, of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said to his fellow members of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that we're not learning the lessons of Fukushima. I mean, you're doing this without adhering to the lessons of Fukushima. The other thing that's happened, and this has happened in recent weeks as well, is that the benchmark study in terms of nuclear power consequences, if there's a catastrophic accident, was something called the CRAC 2, Calculation Reactor Accident Consequences 2 report. Was done back in 1982, and it listed, it's available on the web, just put CRAC 2 in and you can get a listing, including the listing of the nuclear plant near where you are as a listener, the consequences and prompt fatalities and cancer deaths and injuries and so forth and so on.
So in other words, the CRAC 2, what it does is basically say, if you are within this zone, or we anticipate if something goes horribly awry, if we have a catastrophic failure at any given plant, we anticipate X amount of peak early fatalities, X amount of early injuries, X amount of cancer deaths, and X amount of costs in terms of property damage and sort of lost productivity, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and they're talking about actually, it would be like the area around Fukushima, a portion of the planet rendered uninhabitable. That's how they calculate the
right.
property damage. For example, the Indian Point 2 plant 3, there's Indian Point 2 and 3 in operation, both just about 35 miles north of New York. And in $1980, because of the loss of a chunk of planet, the CRAC 2 report projects that the property damage would be $300 billion for Indian Point, a little over $300 billion for Indian Point 3, a little less for Indian Point 2. In 2012 dollars, that's $1 trillion of property damage. In any case, between that and the loss of lives, which this was done, this report at Sandia National Laboratories in New Mexico, which is run by the Department of Energy. I mean, they love nuclear power there, and it was done for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is a booster of nuclear power. So, I mean, it was not done by Greenpeace. It was done by people from within the nuclear establishment. In any case, these are the consequences that were put forth by the U.S., and the Chernobyl consequences make, in fact, these consequences look somewhat minimal. In any case, what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission did, and this is in recent weeks, is to put out a new report called State-of-the-Art Reactor Consequence Analysis. State-of-the-Art Reactor Consequence Analysis, which it acronyms SOARCA. And basically what it says is that, I'm looking right here at the NRC statement, that existing resources and procedures can stop an accident, slow it down, reduce its impact before it can affect public health. Even if accidents proceed uncontrolled, they can take much longer to happen and release much less radioactive material than earlier analysis suggested. The analyzed accidents would cause essentially zero immediate deaths and only a very, very small increase in the risk of long-term cancer deaths. In fact, it says one in a billion.
So they basically updated their projections in the event that a catastrophe happens at one of these plants. But is there any evidence that there has been an update in the technology at these plants? I mean, because, you know, when you're talking about Indian Point, this is a fairly old plant that was built upon a fault line, which at the time they weren't quite aware existed. And so has there been a commensurate updating of the technology at Indian Point to justify an updating in the analysis as to what the implications of a catastrophe there would be?
No. I mean, the study, this SOARCA study, focuses on two clusters of nuclear plants, the Peach Bottom plants and the, I'm just looking here at the report. In any case, it's two clusters of plants that they Peach Bottom and Surrey, the Surrey nuclear power station. Each has two nuclear power plants, and they looked at those facilities. One has pressurized water reactors, one has boiling water reactors. But bottom line is they're really no different than what you have at Indian Point, what you have at Vermont Yankee, what you have at Seabrook, just north of Boston. I mean, nuclear plants are nuclear plants. If there's a loss of coolant accident and a breach of containment, which is, what occurred at Fukushima, it's what Crack 2 was all about. You have a catastrophe, and it not only can happen, it easily can happen. In fact, after that 1982 report, there was an interplay in 1985 between Congress and Edward Markey. He's one congressperson. He's from Cambridge, Mass., not in the pocket of the nuclear industry. And he pushed the NRC on what they considered the likelihood of a serious core meltdown among the 100 U.S. nuclear reactors, now 104 nuclear power plants. And they respond in written testimony, I've reported on this, that the likelihood over a 20-year period would be 45%. And then it goes on that they might be off by 5%, 10%. So we're basically talking about a 50-50 chance of a meltdown occurring every 20 years among a U.S. nuclear power plant. As to your question, whether there's been since Crack 2, incredible advances in nuclear power plants, or these old ones have been improved in some way. No way. Nuclear plants can undergo catastrophic accidents and inevitably will. And that's why, in my judgment, and I'm speaking as a journalist who has looked into this issue for over 30 years, they should all be shut down. They should be shut down today. And we should do what Germany is doing. And we can do this and just switch to safe, clean, renewable energy technologies and forget about these dangerous machines.
Well, Professor Carl Grossman, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, it's what's irrefutably clear is that there has been absolutely no lesson learned from Fukushima. And if anything, it is for this industry to get more aggressive about claiming that it can't happen here.
Yeah,
and that the implications of Fukushima were really just a little inconvenience.
Yeah, and people have to work harder, yet harder, to end this nuclear nightmare.
Carl Grossman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Come back with a brief story and then on to the better half of the program. You know, this program survives only because of member support. Hard times for people out there. I know we've been told we've turned the corner. The light's at the end of the tunnel. We're only 8 years away from full employment now. But a lot of our members have been suffering financially. And so... You know, we have some days where we lose a couple of members, two or three. That was yesterday. So if you have the financial wherewithal, please step up, support the program. These folks now who have hit hard times have been supporting it on your behalf. Now it's your turn to take a swing at the plate, swing at the ball, step up to the plate. Whatever it is, majority.fm, you can become a member right there. Of course, you can support the show in other means, but that is the most important and most helpful. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with a couple of quick stories and then on to the better half. So come on and let me know. Decisions bugging me. Paul Krugman yesterday with a piece on Greece. You gotta learn what a ramp is, buddy. Then all of a sudden, you just fall off the cliff there.
Yeah, that was my bad.
Yeah, trigger happy, heavy lead fingers.
You came in so quick too.
No, it's okay for me to come in quick, but you gotta just ramp it down. Greece has officially defaulted on its debt to private lenders. It was an orderly default, of course. In other words, they cut a deal. But he says that even with this debt relief, the story is not over, because you still have in exchange for that debt relief, a requirement by the Greeks to continue to impose austerity on its people. And as we have said on this program, and by reading Krugman and others, that when you contract government at a time in which you are in a recession, or the private side of your economy is not creating economic activity to provide jobs, et cetera, et cetera. When you contract government, when you reduce government spending, when you try and shrink the deficit, you create a cycle of an ever-increasing lack of economic activity. And as he says, what the Greek experience shows is that while running deficits in good times can get you in trouble, which is indeed the story for Greece, although not Spain, because Spain had low government debt and a budget surplus on the eve of its economic crisis. Trying to eliminate deficits once you're already in trouble is a recipe for depression. Take, for example, Ireland, which imposed its own version of austerity and has seen unemployment grow, has seen their economy shrink. Their unemployment rate now near 15%. Their real GDP down by double digits. And he says Portugal and Spain are in similar dire straits. There is growing evidence that it is self-defeating, even in purely fiscal terms. In other words, even if your goal is to cut the deficit, rather than to provide economic activity for your country or jobs for your people, even if your goal is to cut the deficit, cutting spending actually has the opposite effect, because when you decrease economic activity, you also decrease your revenue, because revenue comes from taxes. Taxes comes from an increase in economic activity. And he goes on to say that the then president of the European Central Bank, Jean-Claude Trichet, in June 2010, said that the idea austerity measures could trigger stagnation is incorrect. Well, it turns out Jean-Claude Trichet was incorrectamundo. And he says, what is the alternative to countries like Greece and Ireland? What alternatives did they have? The answer is that they had and they have no good alternative short of leaving the euro. so that they can inflate their way out of this debt and basically gain control of their economy. He said, in its extreme step that realistically their leaders cannot take until all their options have failed. And he thinks that Greece is rapidly approaching that. He says that Germany and the European Central Bank could take action by demanding less austerity and doing more to boost the European economy as a whole. But the main point that America does have an alternative. We have our own currency. We can borrow long-term at historically low interest rates, so we don't need to enter a downward spiral of austerity and economic contraction, which we are still, I think, teetering on, because we're going to see more contraction in state and city governments. And while at least in the last two jobs reports, the government has not been a drag on economic growth because it's only cut, I think it was 7,000 last month and 1,000 last month, 7,000 the year before, the month before. We could see another round where we start to lose more government jobs and it eats into the recovery to the extent that there is one. All right, folks. And I would like to remind you that I think I did a That's Bullshit video back in a year and a half ago. You can find it on our YouTube channel. I think it was the first one I did. I think it was probably in May. It was almost 2 years ago now. You can check it out there on our YouTube channel. So don't forget, I'd like you to become a member. Other ways of supporting the show, you can go to our link at majority.fm, hit support the show, find our Amazon link. You have to do this once. It's the gift that keeps giving. This really helps. Over the course of a year, this really helps. Go to majority.fm, click support the show. You'll see the big Amazon logo in the middle of the page. Click on it, bookmark it. That's your Amazon link. When you go there and you buy your junk from Amazon, to kid yourself that everything's fine, everything's okay, I'm just going to buy my way out of this feeling of emptiness inside of me because I wouldn't become a member of the Majority Report. We get a kickback. And of course, justcoffee.coop coffee, tea, chocolate, you'll enjoy it so much. You get 10% off with the coupon code MAJORITY. And give us a review on iTunes, why don't you? We have merch, all that and more. Want to call into the show today? 646-257-3920. You know, one of the things you're missing on the better half of the program, we gave you a freebie Friday, I think it was, so that you could hear the... we got a phone call from Sydney Moon, the softcore, midcore porn model. And it created quite a stir on the better half of the program yesterday. A lot of debate. Some people called in, didn't like it. And that's the type of stuff. We go all sorts of places in the better half of the program. And so don't miss it. I mean, and the beauty is that you can go back and reference it. You don't even have to listen. Sometimes I tell you about it in the better half of the show. You can go in the lesser half. You can go back a week or two ago and listen to the better half. It's always there for you for eternity. All right, folks. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. It's the phone number. The IM is Majority FM. You can IM me on your IM devices. In the better half, I'll be talking about this Limbaugh's real big advertising programs problems and what's happening to Doonesbury. See you in the better half.